Hi everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Universal Narratives podcast. This season, we are focusing on the topic of education in different parts of the world. We started with Egypt and we interviewed different educators from the country to learn about their perspectives on how to improve the quality of teaching and learning in the country. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with an educator from Indonesia, which is one of my favorite countries of all times. I'm very excited to be speaking to Mr. Ahmed Yoga Toher today. I'm very, very excited about this opportunity. Thank you so much for making the time to speak to me today.
Assalamualaikum, Dr. Salma.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's just fantastic to be connected to an educator in New York, finally.
Yes, it's great. It's a pleasure for me as well. I would like to start by asking you to introduce yourself to us a little bit, your background, what you're doing, what you're studying, and how you're contributing to education in Indonesia, and which part, of course, of Indonesia you're from, because we know it's a very big country, different parts, different. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you so very much. Assalamualaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. My name is Ahmed Tohir Yoga. It's not Ahmed Yoga Tohir, Ahmed Tohir Yoga. I'm originally from East Java in Indonesia, close to Bali. So right now I'm the deputy principal for public relations office or public relations partnership in an Islamic public high school called Mantu Kota Malang, Mandu Kota Malang. It's I think one of the best schools in the country, the best high school in the country. The students there are from all of Indonesia. So I've been teaching English for I think over 25 years.
Wow.
Or 20 years to be exact, such a long time. So apart from being the deputy principal, I'm also an English teacher at school, and I'm also a teacher's trainer from the province level and sometimes also from national level. Before being in this position, I used to be the head of foreign language development center at school. So we organizes clubs like international language club, and then international guest teachers, international programs the sister schools kind of thing. So before that, I used to be the director for learning resource center at school, providing training for teachers, training for non-teachers, basically for educators and non-educators across Indonesia there. So before moving to this school right now, I started teaching at Mantu Kota Malang in 1999, but I started my teaching career at some universities in Malang from 1993, I believe. So it's kind of quite a long time. And yeah, I do enjoy teaching. I do enjoy collaborating with people, with educators from around the world. So I'm very passionate in connecting teachers, students, schools in Indonesia to other teachers, other students, and other schools in other countries. So that's the reason why I'm also active in some international education platform which provides global citizens for education. So that's a brief info about me, Dr. Salma. Thank you.
That's impressive. So I understand that your experience is in school as well as university, as well as other organizations that provide different services for teachers, as well as international education as well. So my first question, since your experience is so broad and it covers so many different areas of education, can you, because we don't really know much about the educational system in Indonesia, would you like to maybe briefly tell us a little bit about how the schooling structure is in Indonesia? What are the different models? Like, for example, do you have private and public? Islamic, I know you mentioned Islamic, so like different models and what kind of teacher preparation is needed to be able to teach in all these different schools in the country.
Well, thank you. That's a very good question, Dr. Salman. So yeah, in Indonesia, basically we have the so-called 12 years compulsory education program. So 6 years for primary school, 3 years middle school and 3 years high school. That's compulsory. So we really hope that everyone, you know, from 1 to 12 can really enjoy the compulsory education. And then, well, the fact that not all alumni from high school then continue to university, but I believe in major cities, in big cities, in urban areas, like most of their high school alumni then continue their study to universities. Like students at my schools, like almost like I believe 100% of the alumni go to universities. However, the rate of enrollment to university in rural area is like much lower. Like I myself is from a very rural area, very small village in East Java as well. So I know that not many friends of mine from the same village then went to university.
Okay.
But the thing is now changes. I mean, like now more people even from rural area can also go to university. So, okay. The compulsory education is for 12 years, but well, we really hope that like over time, like the rate of enrollment to universities is getting higher, even like for rural area people. Speaking about the education system, there are 3 ministries in charge of education in Indonesia. Okay. So, well, in some countries, I believe that there is only one ministry of education, right? But in Indonesia, FYI, that majority of Indonesia are Muslim. So in Indonesia, we have 3 ministries. One is the Ministry of National Education and Culture, which is in charge of like public schools.
Okay.
Non-religion based school. Yeah. So it's public school, private and state schools. And then the second ministry in charge of education is Ministry of Religious Affairs.
Okay.
So this ministry is in charge of schools, like my school is Islamic public high school. It is a public high school, but it's Islamic. So this school organized by the Ministry of Religious Affairs, and the numbers are so big. So we have so many private schools. It's called madrasa, right? Like in Egypt, I think it's called madrasa.
Yes.
There's so many madrasa. I mean, in comparison to the public school, I think the numbers of madrasa, both private and public, are much bigger. So the third is the Ministry of Research, Technology, and Higher Education in charge of that university's level of education. But recently, like last year or 2 years ago, there was like a change that the higher education than public education is now organized or administered by the Ministry of National Education and Culture. So it's now one ministry handle that, you know, primary, middle, high schools in, I mean, public plus universities level. So, why do we have that special ministry of religious affairs also in charge of this? Because the numbers of madrasa in Indonesia is like I mentioned before, that even bigger than those public schools.
Okay.
Yeah, so there are 2 kinds, like private schools and public schools. Private school, usually they still, you know, require like students to pay the school fees, but for public school, it's supposed to be free. But for some public school, like my school is also public school, but students still have to pay the school fee. It's not really school fee, but like donation by parents, because they want to have their kids enjoy like better service in education things. So as like the model school, as their favorite school, of course we need a lot of financial support, but the government doesn't really provide that much. So parents under the committee and the school committee coordination, then donate some financial support for the operational of the schools. And it is legal. I mean, We got like special letter from the government, from the ministry, indicating that we can get the parents' financial support because we have this and this and this program, a lot of programs going on at school. So that's briefly about the education system in Indonesia. So yeah.
It's very interesting that you have a Ministry of Religious Affairs that oversees a sector of schools. You know, some of the schools that are religious schools, because I don't think this is the same in other countries, but it might be because you have different religions in the country as well, and that's why it's, yes, that's very interesting. Okay, so...
And speaking about the curriculum as well, Dr. Salma, so those madrasa, the school, and then the supervision of Ministry of Religious Affairs, they apply all the curriculum by the Ministry of National Education and Culture, plus additional curriculum from the Ministry of Religious Affairs. So the load of studying for madrasa students are also even like more than those studying in public school, in general public school. So we have, I think, around 6 to 8 or 10 additional subjects, which is much. So in public high school, they have like 41 hours in a week.
Yes.
But then in madrasah, they have to spend like 57 hours in a week.
Wow.
So a lot of differences. We start very early, like at my school, we start at 6:30. It's very early, and we finish by 3 or 4 p.m.
That's a very long day for the students.
It is very long. And for those living in Mahat, they'll still have like afternoon class, evening class. So it's like the whole day is that they are awake for education.
That's a lot of hours. Is it because they do, like, as you mentioned, more religious or more religion-specific subjects? Like they spend more time, for example, memorizing the Quran and stuff like
that? Right, because we have that around 6 to 8 additional subjects like fiqh, Quran, hadith, Arabic, and then Sharia, this kind of thing. So and then Islamic history. In public school, they do not study Islamic history, but in madrasah, they have to study like history, like general history, and then Islamic history. So 41 or 42 hours compared to like 57. That's much differences, of course. So we need more time to stay at school.
That's very interesting. And are all the schools free, or you have to pay extra for the religious schools?
Well, it depends. Like if they are private schools, they have to pay. Okay. Yeah. But if you are in state-owned madrasah, like my school is a Islamic public high school. So, and because we get that special letter from recommendation by the government just to improve the quality of education at the school. So we were given like, you know, recommendation or legal letter that we can also get the funding from the society, from the parents in this way.
Yes. Oh, okay. That's very good to know. So for the religious schools, some of them are publicly owned by the Ministry of Education and some of them are private. So the students have the choice to go to the public ones if they want to. Great.
Right.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about teacher preparation? How are teachers who teach in different school models prepared differently?
Yeah. Well, normally, one cannot be a teacher if he doesn't have like teaching certification from universities. So, I mean, like most teachers, like teaching in public school, especially, they have to get like that teaching certification before applying or before starting teaching. However, in more rural areas, because of the lack of resources, the lack of teachers who are willing to teach there, usually teachers are teaching different subjects which is not his or her expertise. So let's say he's actually not an English teacher, but because there is no one else at the school who has that English certification, than he, because he can speak English, he can, you know, understand English better than other teachers, so he is assigned to teach English. That happened. So, but the government is very serious about developing and improving the quality of teachers in Indonesia. So, thousands of scholarships are provided for teachers to pursue their master's and their PhD, which is great. So, starting from 2008, I believe, the government has implemented the 20% of the national budget for education. Before, that didn't happen. So before, we had very low percentage of national budget for education. But since 2008, I believe, we have implemented 20% of the national budget for education, which is amazing. So that changed the direction of, you know, education system, education, you know, quality education service in Indonesia. Because like now we have more teachers, even in primary school, who are given scholarship to do their master's. More teachers are given scholarship to do their PhD on the doctoral program. So we are very happy. I mean, the assignments are still there, the homework are still there, but I think we are in the better and positive direction. So, I mean, with this huge size of Indonesia, we have like that many teachers. Like, well, if we talk about like education in cities, in, you know, like urban areas, we do not really see that problem. But if you go to the more rural areas, of course, we will see a lot of problems. So we need really massive willingness and budget from the government to have an accelerated program of sending teachers to get their teaching certification in the first place. So for teachers, for teachers who have been teaching for years and they didn't get that certification yet, so the government provide a 3 to 4 months professional training program. It's called professional certified teachers. So as soon as they finish this certification program, then they can get also better salary. So they'll have different salary from those who do not get that certification. So and we have also government teachers versus non-government teachers. Like if you are government teachers, you got like salary from government. So it's getting better over time. Plus your salary, because you get your teaching certification, you are professional teachers, then you are given like a double salary. But if you are a teacher but you're not yet a professional teacher, soon by the certificate, you do not get double salary, just one salary. That's kind of interesting to provide that challenge for teachers. In the beginning, it was not that massive, but I think now it is getting massive. Like almost all teachers get that certification, means that they also get like their salary plus their professional salary, and it's double then, which is great. So, but for the non-government teachers, if they do not get that certification, they are not paid as good as the government teachers. I mean, depends on the school they are working. Okay. Depends on the madrasa they are working. If they work in a good school, in good madrasa, they can earn like, better salary. But in most cases, like, schools or madrasa cannot pay that much for the non-government teachers. So, but the non-government teachers, when they get the certification, the professional teacher certification, then they also get that professional teacher salary, and then the salary from the schools, which is, not the same. It depends on schools.
Yeah, it's so many different variables. It's amazing because it's very similar to other countries that other educators that I spoke to from other countries as well. And there is always this discrepancy between public and private and certified and not being certified. But I think the highlight of all of this is that the government in Indonesia is providing funding for education, which is great, and allocating a bigger percentage for education and for professional development and making sure that teachers are certified. So I think this in itself is great. And I think teachers are being motivated to pursue their certifications because of this. So that's a good incentive for the teachers as well. Great. So let's move to our next topic, which is, you know, we're doing educational development. What are some areas in education? So from what I understand, there are so many different variables that come into play in when it comes to education in Indonesia, government, non-government, teacher certification, no teacher certification, religious, non-religious, different school systems, three ministries. But it's a 12-year model. And I'm sure there are a lot of positive aspects of the educational system in Egypt. So in Indonesia, I'm so sorry, I just finished Egypt. So I would like you to start by telling me a little bit about areas that you think are strong about the educational system in Indonesia. Things that you are proud of as an educator who has worked in so many different areas and who has long years of experience serving in different capacities. What are some areas that you think are strong about the educational system in Indonesia? And then afterwards, we can focus on areas that need work.
Thank you so much. That's also a very, you know, hard question to answer, actually, but I have to answer it. Yeah, I mean, speaking about the strength of our system, I would say that it is good that it is administratively centralized. Yeah, so the administration centralized in the ministry, but then also branch to some, you know, provinces level. But then the schools are also given enough space to organize, modify, and run the curriculum. So the government provide, you know, central curriculum. This is the curriculum for primary school, for middle school, for high school. But then schools are also given a very good space to modify the curriculum, to organize the curriculum, to run the curriculum, as necessary, as long as the basic competencies in the curriculum by the government is met, then the schools can absolutely free to improve. Like at my school, for example, we have that national education curriculum, plus religious affairs ministry curriculum, but we also put some other, local strength. We call it local strength, like that we also provide for students. Like there is no, all school has like English subject, right? But not many schools implements or provide TOEFL preparation class for the students. So in my school, other than English class and then the English club, which is optional, we also have that TOEFL prep class for grade 10 and grade 11. And this is additional subject. It is done after school. And we also have another additional subject, like this time we have like Japanese class, but this is in the curriculum, but we can do that. I mean, parents need that. Parents want school to provide that for the student because they will eventually need the TOEFL score when they apply for good universities, when they apply for scholarship overseas, okay? So this is compulsory. This is after school, but compulsory for all 10th graders and 11th graders. And by grade 12, they have to do the TOEFL test. Then we are working with also very good English service institution like EF English First. I think it's worldwide. So that's compulsory in addition to that many, many, many additional subjects. We can charge the students for that program. So usually they pay a certain amount of money just to to have the program run very well. We also have some other programs that are implemented at school. I mean, school by school is different. So That I think the strength that the curriculum is centralized, but then schools are still given that authority and that flexibility to be improving, to be modifying the curriculum as necessary, as needed by the school, by the students. So I think that's very much the strength, if I can mention.
Yeah, I like what you said. The curriculum being centralized in such a big country is a big thing. And you have set standards and competencies that everybody needs to achieve. But at the same time, different schools have freedom, the freedom to develop themselves and offer different programs and different courses to accommodate the groups of students that they're serving. Something is in, so you keep saying parents want that. I noticed that so far in our interview. So I'm assuming parents have a big say in what to offer in the school and what programs they want students and their children to learn in the different schools. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the role of parents when it comes to schools in Indonesia?
Yeah, well, maybe that's because I speak from the school that I'm working right now. So the students at my schools are from all over Indonesia.
Yes.
So they are highly selected. So the enrollment rate is like 3,000 something every year, and we take only 300, 400 students every year.
Yes.
So it's very competitive to be there. So parents who send their kids there are also, I think, the well-educated parents, most of them from middle-up families. So they always want to make sure that the school provide the best service for their kids. But it doesn't happen to all schools. I mean, like if you talk about schools in rural areas, of course, it's different issues, different stories. So I mean, all schools, all madrasa, they have the school committee and the madrasa committee. And like in my school, we have the school committee who happen to be like the representative from parents, the professors from universities around my schools, so the education figure in the city, so also from different sectors. So the committee is really it really has a very complete composition from different areas. So the committee organized all the funding support from the parents. So it's not to the schools, but the school committee organized the financial support from parents, and then the committee, the school committee, also working with schools management to be making sure that the program is well prepared, the program is well implemented, the program is well evaluated. So we are working very closely with the school committee in running most of the program, because if we just rely on the government funding, that is not at all enough, because the funding is, they have that 20% budget, national budget for education, but still a lot of schools all over Indonesia to be taken care of. So we really also rely on and count on that, support from parents, from the school committee in running our programs.
Okay. That's great. I love the close relationship between parents and schools, and that parents have a say in. Course, it can have its pros and cons, but I'm glad it's working very well in your case. And I really like that you're offering classes like TOEFL, for example, because it's such an important thing for students to learn, and it's a class that everybody needs before they go to college, especially because English is not the first language of Indonesia, so students would need that for college application as well. Japanese, I was actually about to ask you what foreign languages are taught in your school, but you mentioned Arabic for the Islamic studies and, for understanding the Quran, English and Japanese, plus local languages.
We have also German and then French.
Oh.
So, we used to have Mandarin or Chinese. So we used to have like 6 English clubs. So now we have like 5 English clubs at schools.
Yes.
That's also another thing. So not all schools, not all madrasa has like, foreign language clubs like at my school. But I'm very blessed and lucky to be there. So I can really organize, and these clubs because the students need that. So in the beginning of academic year, so we send out like form for students to choose the extracurricular, the language club, and so on and so forth. And they're so into learning language. Why Japanese is taught there? Because we have many students who are really into continuing their study overseas to Japan, to German. Why we also open like German language club, because we always have alumni every year who continue their study to German, so to Germany. So yeah, that's the reason. So we pick the clubs, the language club, because of depends on the student's interest in pursuing their study overseas. Arabic, of course, we have many alumni going to Al Cairo, Al Azhar University in Cairo. So we have many alumni going to Saudi, to Yemen, to Sudan. So of course they need Arabic. But Arabic is compulsory as well.
Yeah, I totally get that. You know, the need for Arabic, it's the largest Muslim country in the world, Indonesia, and which is something very interesting for non-Muslims as well, because people always assume that the majority of Muslims are Arabs, which is not true. Arabs are only 20% of the Muslim population of the whole world, which is very interesting. And the largest country in the world that has Muslims is actually Indonesia, followed by other countries like Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nigeria. So most of the countries that are Muslim majority are actually non-Arab, which is very interesting for so many people. That's great. So let's now shift to some areas that you believe need work a little bit in the educational system. You can focus, since we're mainly talking about school and your specific case, which is working in a religious school that has students from everywhere in Indonesia, and that is kind of different than the other schools because it serves a different kind of population. Most of the parents come from a very specific socioeconomic background, and they come from a certain educational background. So their needs and what they aspire to see their kids learning at school is different than other schools. So let's focus on your school, because as we said, it's a large country with different systems. What are some areas that you believe need work?
Well, I would say I will choose like Indonesian context. So like there are two areas that I believe need to be improved like very soon, like disparity and inequalities in the educational facilities. That's one, and disparity and inequalities in the human resources. I mean, like, for many years, the education and everything in Indonesia was so Java-centrist. It's everything centralized in Java.
Yeah.
But I think now things are changing in a better direction. But that's still happening. I mean, like, the disparity, the inequalities in the facilities, the resources are still there. So, We cannot deny that fact, but you know, like schools in Java, of course, has better facilities than those in Kalimantan, in Sumatra, in other areas of Indonesia. But I mentioned that, you know, the government, I think, has been working very well on this in the past like 1 or 2 decades. So with the autonomy system, with the local government, which are given like bigger authority and spaces to recognize the two issues in facilities and resources, I think. The disparity, the inequalities is, you know, not that much like before. So we have also, with that 20% like national budget, the government also provide like a lot of grants and scholarship that are also addressed to teachers from those areas and that are considered to be like not that advanced like in Java. So if I'm not mistaken, like the scholarship from Australian government, from the ADS scholarship to Australia, I think they also addressed a group of teachers from the eastern part of Indonesia group of teachers, like for group of female teachers in the eastern part of Indonesia, that's also their priority. They take from other places, but let's say 60% are addressed to teachers from this area. So that's, I think, also the policy made by the government and the sponsors in Australia to provide more scholarship for those people. Like in Fulbright scholarship, I was in Fulbright scholarship myself. And there was also a scholarship for people in Aceh after the tsunami hit Aceh.
Yeah.
So the government provide that special allocation for scholarship for teachers in educators in Aceh or educators in Papua. So there is that mechanism that the government is now working on just to provide, you know, more equal opportunities, more, you know, I mean, better opportunities for those in the so-called left behind areas. So I think that's the thing that needs to be improved, and I think the government has been working on it very well. So, yeah.
That's great. That's very good. And I think it's very similar, like, you know, from my conversations with other educators from other countries, such as Saudi Arabia and Egypt, I think the idea of the capital cities or the big cities getting more funding, getting more resources, getting more attention overall from the government is always the case. And like a country like Egypt, for example, I can see this scenario exactly happening in Egypt. Cairo getting all the attention, all the good schools and the resources, qualified teachers, whereas rural areas or areas in the southern part of the country are not getting these resources. And it's not only in education, it's in other areas, exactly. Sectors as well. Yeah, and teacher education is the same thing. And I think you brought this issue earlier in the interview that teachers in rural areas usually do not possess the same kind of credentials and qualification like teachers in bigger cities. And I'm very happy to see that the government is addressing that issue and trying to make sure that equal or equitable, I would say, solutions are, you know, being offered so that teachers in other areas as well would have the same kind of qualifications and credentials. So, Mr. Ahmed, my next question to you is, given these issues that you just discussed, as an educator who's doing, you're a school principal, you're also working with teachers, how do you see, or you know, you're working also with other organizations as well, international educators, different societies and different committees. How are you contributing to the development of the quality of teaching and learning in your country? What are you doing besides being a school principal? I'm sure you're doing a lot.
But deputy principal, be exact. The deputy principal.
Deputy principal, yes. What else are you doing to make sure that you're helping with, you know, equity issues and the disparity issues in Indonesia in terms of human resources or facilities and resources?
Well, thank you so much. That's also a big question. And, you know, like I am officially teaching at my school, Bantu Kota Malang, but I always perceive myself as, you know, national educator. I mean, like all the kids around Indonesia are all Indonesian kids, the nation's kids that need to be helped. The teachers, not just from my school, from other schools also need to be helped. I mean, I'm blessed and lucky to be teaching at Mantu Kota Malang, which happened to be a very good school. But then if I just focused on the school I'm teaching right now, then I do not really do pay my debt to the government. I got a lot of, you know, funding, scholarship from the government. So I need to pay it back to the nation. So the way I do that is that I joined that many international educational platforms just to provide access for not only teachers at my school, not only students at my school, but also teachers and students in you know, other schools, other parts of Indonesia. So I travel to Papua, I travel to Sulawesi, I travel to Sumatra, to provide training, to connect the teachers and students and schools there to that, you know, to the world. So I also work with the Ministry of Religious Affairs providing the training for teachers in the province level, hoping that I can share what I experienced, what I learned, what I have in my school to as many educators as possible in other schools, so they can also disseminate what they learn from the training. So I'm working with international platform called Generation Global. We have been working with that for like 12 years, like 10 years in 2012. And the impact has been very, very positive. Like the alumni used to be working with me doing the conferences with the schools from around the world. And they were so happy that they got the experience, because when once they were studying the, you know, university level, one of the things that they remember very well was that rare experience of doing the video conferences, with doing the dialogue with their fellow students from other part of the world. And it didn't happen in my school, in many schools. So I really want to disseminate, to share what we have at schools to as many educators as possible, not just in madrasah, but also in public school. So since 2008, I've been hosting so many guest teachers from around the world at my school, but we did not use the resources ourselves. So we also shared the resources. We have guest teachers from Egypt, from United States, from Europe, from China, from India, from Japan, from all over basically. So they came to Mandua Kota Malang to my school, but then I did not use them by ourselves. So we share with other schools who need access to get resources like guest teachers, because it is not easy to get guest teachers. Well, alhamdulillah, because I'm also working at university, so I have that connection to bring that many guest teachers like from around the world to Indonesia, and then share with other friends, with other educators at the schools in Indonesia. But that's how I see my role in, how I see my contribution to the education in Indonesia. So I'm now really into bridging the connection the schools in Indonesia and school from around the world. And hopefully Dr. Salman can also help me finding a school partner, a sister school in New York sometimes to be connecting to us, so we can work on that together sometimes, just for the sake of the nation's future.
I love that. I love that you're doing a lot of work with teachers and you're sharing with these resources and these either human resources or resources in general with other educators in the country that need it as well. You have a wealth of knowledge, and I'm so happy to see that you're sharing this. You're training teachers, you're part of so many different platforms, and you're bringing these ideas from other nations and these innovations, and just bringing everything back to Indonesia so that you would improve the quality of teaching and learning as a whole. I believe you're doing your PhD, right?
I did, but not finished.
Okay.
Then I'm now doing my PhD, but still not finished. Well, you know, different things, different issues. Well, hopefully I can finish soon.
Of course, it's a matter of time. It just takes time.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's not easy sometimes when you have so many other responsibilities. And I see that you're doing so many other things, just being at the school from 6 to 4:30 by itself every day. And you probably stay longer as well, being the deputy principal. So, yes. How do you view your future role? How do you want to expand your role in the future? Do you want to expand it? Do you want to continue doing teacher training and just bringing these resources and ideas to the country, or you want to do something else?
Well, I will be retired in like 10 years. So hopefully in 10 years, I can leave a legacy for myself, for my schools, for the education in Indonesia. So I think I will be more into writing maybe books, things, so we can share the experience more massive in books. Well, I'm not starting yet, but I think that's one of the plan for the future. I mean, because I believe I won't be able to be providing training for that long time. But if I have everything in books, then people can still learn from what we experience, what we have, right? So hopefully we can also collaborate writing books sometime, hopefully. I mean,
of course.
I'm really thinking of, you know, leaving a legacy as an educator in terms of, you know, writing books or, you know, just some publication. I mean, that's necessary because especially in this digital era, we need to have our digital record, right? So we don't leave anything there, we don't exist.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And, you know, I think it's also, if you just impact one person and this person remembers these ideas and applies these ideas in the future, this in itself is amazing. It doesn't have to be a huge, you know, impact. It can be something small, but I'm sure you're reaching a lot of people already. And the other thing I wanted to mention also is that people really need to see educators from each country contributing and writing about their experiences so that they can use these experiences and these ideas in their own classrooms. Because oftentimes what happens is that we get all these textbooks from other countries, but we do not always consider different cultures and different backgrounds and different values and principles that are very specific to certain nations and certain cultures. And when you have somebody from the home culture writing about these experiences and delivering these messages to the teachers of the country, then I think this is amazing because they can totally relate to that. So I always say people who come from the local communities should give back to the local communities because they care the most, they know the context the most, and they can really help the people the most in each country. So my last question to you, which is a question that I always ask everybody who I interview for this podcast, is what can we as international educators learn from the Indonesian experience?
Well, that's a hardcore question. Like I mentioned that now I think Indonesian government is providing more funding, more budgeting in like that 20% percentage of the national budget is good things. I think from those countries that still do not apply that 20% national budget for education, they really need to work on it as soon as possible because this is necessary. We will never be able to overcome that national issues of education if we do not have this enough or sufficient funding, right? So it all starts from the government's policy. So I'm very thankful that the Indonesian government has provided that 20%. Still a lot of homeworks to be done, but I think this is the starting step that we can really expect to achieve better and better quality of education in the future. So hopefully, a little sharing that I share with you this time will be also a lesson by whoever is listening or watching this podcast.
I love that. And I think it's a dream for every nation. Every nation really wants the government to provide lots of funding for education. And unfortunately, it's not always the case. And educators end up just having to manage what they have, limited resources, limited facilities, not enough salaries, which can be very demotivating for a lot of educators and can sometimes lead to educators leaving education and doing other things as well, because everybody just wants to have a good quality of life and sometimes it becomes very challenging. Yes. So at the end of the...
Happens in Indonesia as well. But, you know, hopefully it's getting better.
Believe relatively teacher salaries are lower than average salaries of other professions in general everywhere in the world. But I always tell the teachers that I work with that you're not really teaching for the money. I mean, everybody needs the money, but there is a huge impact that an educator can make on the lives of others. And this is something that we can always remember and remind ourselves of. It can be a little bit challenging, but at least if I touch a person's life and help the person see their future in a brighter and more positive way, then I did my part as an educator.
I agree with you.
Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate this. I learned so much today.
It's my pleasure. I learned a lot from this very brief podcast as well. So that's just fantastic to be connected to New York educators this time.
So is there any specific way, if anybody is interested in reaching out to you or communicating with you, is there like a website that you have, or how do you prefer that educators get in touch with you?
I do not have that website yet, but hopefully in the future soon. As the deputy principal for public relations, I'm working with my team to be also, you know, making sure the website and the school website is working. So I'm with the school website at the moment, but you know, WhatsApp and email is like the easiest way to connect me. I mean,
perfect. And I'm also going to include your information, your bio, your contact information in the website, and also on LinkedIn, and Universal Narratives also now has a page on Instagram. So please make sure you follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and yes. So thank you so much again, and I look forward to our future collaborations.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Salma. Have a wonderful, wonderful day.
You too.
It's night.
It's night in New York.
In like 15 minutes after this. So.
Okay.
Thank you so very much for having me here, Dr. Salma Wali.
No problem. Thank you.